I wanted to talk about something a little different today than I normally do. I think, given the recent air crash in Egypt, I wanted to talk about terrorism a little bit in Egypt. I thought it's especially relevant since we've been talking a lot about tourism and traveling. So this is actually something that some people have asked to focus a bit on modern Egypt, and this still brings in that ancient side, but I realize it's not what most of you maybe intend for the podcast to be, and for that I apologize if this isn't something that's more to your liking. But this Thursday I'll have up a more traditional episode, I think, focusing on our series continuing to examine archaeology. But given that we are talking about terrorism, this might be something that's a little bit sensitive for some of the more younger listeners, so I wanted to throw out that warning. So recently there was the downing of an Egypt airplane, which by all indications appears to be terrorism. It doesn't seem that the plane was completely blown up by a large bomb, but everything that I can read suggests that there was some sort of smaller bomb, perhaps in the lavatory, that was detonated and then filled the cabin with smoke, caused the plane to destabilize, and eventually led to a crash which, it appears, killed all 66 people on board. And there's a couple interesting things and some questions I've gotten about this. One of the questions was, what will this do to Egyptian tourism? And I think that this is going to be something that's really going to affect Egyptian tourism probably for around a decade or more. And I'll tell you why in more detail as we go through some of the history of terrorism in Egypt, or really terrorism as it relates to tourism in Egypt. And the reason we just have to cap it there is, depending on how you look at terrorism, you can argue that with the intent of terrorism to cause terror, that's something that we can extend all the way back into the ancient world. And we could even then, coming modern, look at that when the British were occupying Egypt. So we have to draw that line someplace. I think the natural point to draw it for this conversation is in the 1990s, because in the 1990s, that's really where we saw a dramatic uptick in terrorism in Egypt. There's terrorism that's aimed at a lot of different things within Egypt. Some of it is actually aimed at the Christian minority, most of which are Coptic Christians. Some of it is aimed at tourists. Some of it's aimed at the government, and in fact, quite often you'll see that it's Egyptian police and military who are some of the largest victims of terrorism. But I think it's a little bit harder to understand in Egypt because we have two factors at work. We have Islamic extremism, and not simply one force. There's actually varying factions that are vying for control and attempting to destabilize the government. But in Egypt, I think it takes a different form somewhat. And that's because it's not as though all people are unified and want, say, what they perceive to be a foreign government out. Certainly there are elements that want the current government out. And there are many individuals who want a more pro-Islamic or even an Islamic state that's ruled over by an imam or a cleric. So these are the things that are some of the goals. But the Egyptians themselves are largely not supportive of terrorism. And it's easy to explain when you kind of look at Egypt as a whole why that might be. So when we look at Egypt, they really survive on tourism. So many people have their lives in some way supported by tourism. So when you look at a big city like Cairo, think about all the hotels, all the people eating in the restaurants, all the taxi drivers, all the tour guides, to say nothing of the then state workers, of the archaeologists, those who are acting as security at the sites, those who are ticket takers. And it is something that's actually used in many ways as what we would maybe call in the U.S. as make work jobs. In the U.S., in the Great Depression, we had the WPA, the Work Project Administration, which would do many different public works projects as a way of creating work for people and then also benefiting the nation. That was the idea anyways. Well, in Egypt, they have similar struggles. They have a very depressed economy. To give you an idea, when I first traveled to Egypt, which would have been in about 2004, the Egyptian pound got you about, say, 20 cents per pound. So for every $1, you could get 5 Egyptian pounds. I believe now that's over 8 pounds per dollar, closer to 9. So it's reduced by, 40-35% of its value. And what you've seen is you'll go places, and for those of you who visited Egypt, you'll see this, and if you didn't know why, maybe this will make sense. You'll go, say, to a smaller temple. And there might not be many people around, but you'll see 3 people together. You'll see one person at a booth who's taking tickets. You'll see another person maybe 10 meters only before that selling the ticket. You'll see a security guard there, and all 3 of those individuals, which could be in theory one job, are all there as a way of trying to give people more work. Now, when you go inside the temple, you're then going to see all the unofficial workers. You'll see individuals hoping for a tip that are going to offer you some sort of tour as you walk in. You're going to have individuals selling small objects and knickknacks and all sorts of things like that. So tourism really supports a lot of people. And the government knows that, and the people know that. And what ended up happening is we had, throughout the 50s and 60s, there were, smaller attacks. But in the 90s, things really jumped up. You would have ambushes. You had a few attacks on tourists in Cairo. And these were attacks that were significant. So in 1996, there was an attack near the pyramids that killed 18 Greek tourists and wounded another 15 Greeks and Egyptians. In September of 1997, there were gunmen who attacked individuals near the Egyptian Museum in Tahrir Square, and 9 tourists were killed. And 19 were wounded. And the reason that the terrorists attack tourists is because they do so much economic support for the country. So the goal of terrorism in this case is not just to create terror and instill fear. The goal of terrorism, for these terrorists is to stop tourists coming to Egypt, which will depress the economy, which will lead to dissatisfaction among the people, in addition to government crackdowns on the Islamic terrorists, which will then, this is their theory anyways, foment some sort of rebellion that will then overthrow the government, and then you'll have, hopefully, for what these people want, a more Islamic state. So that's why these tourists are often attacked. Well, in November of 1997, we have one of the biggest attacks. And this really changes everything. And it turns popular opinion really against terrorists. So on November 17th, there was a massacre in Luxor at the site of Deir el-Bahri. Deir el-Bahri was the mortuary temple of Hatshepsut, and it's built into a box canyon. So the way that the temple's built is it's built kind of into this cliffside, and it's quite a long walk up to it. But this is a beautiful temple. It's one of the highlights of almost anyone who goes. And this is going to be one of the things that if you're doing any sort of tour, if you're going to Luxor, you're definitely going to see. Well, in this attack, 62 tourists were killed. And if you go to the temple today, you can actually still see some of the bullet holes in some areas that are in the temple. So 6 assailants go in and they attack the security forces and the tourists. Now, they themselves were disguised as security forces. So they descend upon the temple early in the morning. And they go through the entire temple and they were shooting people point blank. They were beheading them. They were disemboweling them. It was brutal, and it was an attempt and to kill every single person there. Now, they were killed soon afterwards. Egyptian security forces and tourist police arrived shortly after this. They engaged in a battle, and they were either killed or committed suicide. But this was something that actually had an effect, I think, that was different than the organizers had planned. So initially, on the attack, we have the attack, and we see then that this attack to devastate the Egyptian economy, on the one hand, works. Tourism dramatically falls off. But it also was something that was a point of anger and embarrassment for the Egyptian people. This was seen as something that was not only then hurting the whole country economically, but as something that was brutal and really a point of shame for many of the Egyptians that I've talked to about this attack. These individuals, as I said, went through and were killing men, women, children as young as 5 years old, again, in this brutal execution-style attack. And groups that came out and claimed responsibility when they saw the backlash later tried to back away from that and say that they weren't actually intending to kill everyone, that they were going to, you know, try to take them as hostages. But that's just completely untrue. They systematically went through and killed all of these individuals for about 45 minutes to an hour before the tourist police and the military arrived. In addition to, again, killing them, they were also mutilating the bodies. So this is something that really did lead to a crackdown. Now, this was 1997, and tourism took a long time to recover. This was then followed by the September 11th attacks on the U.S. just about 4 years later. And these things all led into this idea of Egypt not being a safe place. And since then, attacks have been continuing. A lot of them don't get that much press, or they get press and then, you know, they go away and then there's something new and significant. Within the early 2000s, for instance, there were a couple large attacks in Sinai. So there was one bombing, and Sinai is a little bit different. So the Sinai Peninsula, kind of like the Red Sea coast, are areas where you have it. It's more of a resort type feel. You don't necessarily have individuals going there to see antiquities, but you do have snorkeling and scuba diving. You have everything that you have with a, you know, ocean resort. Well, there was a large attack, a bombing, in the Sinai. And in fact, there were three bomb attacks targeting various tourist hotels in that area. We also had an attack then the following year in Cairo. And that's something where we started to see this uptick again coming about a decade after the attack at Luxor, where they were attacking these tourist resorts, not necessarily the antiquity sites, but these resorts in Sinai and Sharm el Sheikh. And that, in fact, is where we had the attack on the Russian plane that was downed last October. That was another one that was tied to these resort areas. that's really a great place for the Middle East and then even for Europe to go to have more of a traditional type holiday as opposed to going and visiting the sites. One thing that feeds into this that many people don't, I think, necessarily realize is that since the revolution in 2011, there's actually a bit of an insurgency within the Sinai area. In fact, there's been numerous attacks there on different types of locations and even engagements with the military in that region. There's a ISIL insurgency in that area that's actually been responsible for attacking Egyptian churches in the region as well as clashing with the military. So, leading to present, what that's led to is a situation where the Egyptian government really does not take any sort of terrorism lightly. These type of things usually result in a crackdown and a major investigation. We also see, and this is something you'll see in the media, and it's something that I've been asked about by a few people, you see a reluctance to admit that it's terrorism because of the effect that this has. So you're going to see if you're looking at it, and this is the case, and this is something that's been seen, they're going to say, well, we don't know what it is, it doesn't look like this. And that's part of why this podcast is coming a little bit later than normal, because I was trying to wait to see if there'd be more information, if there'd be an official announcement. But those type of things, they don't really do. They want to downplay this because it does have such a big economic effect. And I think that this is something that's going to have, unfortunately, a cumulative effect that I think is going to last for maybe as much as a decade. And I think that it's going to be so bad for a couple of different reasons. The first question I always get about traveling and visiting Egypt is it safe? Is it safe to travel there? And I always give my opinion, which is, I've never personally felt unsafe traveling there. It is a much different story for women. Almost every woman I know who's gone there and faces some sort of harassment, whether it's catcalling, whether it's being physically assaulted. So you definitely want to travel in groups and take much more stringent measures to protect your security if you are a woman. But it was never the type of thing where this was a worry, the you know, terrorism. I never had that. That being said, it's a much different situation now. There are many archaeological excavations, which are having their work paused. There are more security concerns. The Egyptian government is very worried that there's going to be terrorist attacks against archaeological missions and excavations, which is going to be huge national press. And I should even say here to give a quick note, because this is perhaps a bias that I have. Whenever we focus on these things, it does, in a way, do a disservice, because there are many attacks that happen within Egypt that don't go reported because it's only between the local population. As I said before, one of the biggest victims are usually the police who are responding to these attacks. There was an attack not that long ago in Luxor where there was an individual who was attempting to go towards the temple to try to bomb tourists, and it was stopped by an alert tourist police who was actually killed in the attack. And these are the type of things that we see quite often. You know, they're trying to stop them from reaching and affecting the tourists that they might get. And those don't seem to get as much press as the foreigners who are killed. And I think that's a bit of a shame, but in a way it's also understandable, because when it's something that happens away and it's amongst people you don't know and it's people from that country, you know, I doubt that when police are killed in America, it makes news overseas. But when it's a flight that's going into Egypt, or when it's a group of tourists, that's something that's much more tangible, I think, and relatable to everyone. That's something that everyone thinks and looks and says, that could be me. And then the story hits closer to home. Now, I think that the airline attacks are particularly bad. And there's been three within the span, really, of about 7 months. So there was the flight in October, the Russian airliner, that was completely downed. There was another flight that was hijacked by an Egyptian national. That's a bit more of a weird story, but it was hijacked and the plane was diverted. It wasn't for any sort of Islamic terrorism. It was, you know, to do with his estranged wife. But then there's this attack. And I think what's unique about this attack and what makes it different is that this was a flight that was going to Egypt. This was Egypt Air, but it was coming from Charles de Gaulle. It was coming from Paris. So this is something where even the act of getting to Egypt, the perception is going to be that this is how dangerous it is, that people aren't going to be able to travel. And I think that that's something that is going to have a lasting effect and impression, because we're seeing now these attacks that are killing just as many people as that Luxor attack. And they're happening more frequently, and they're constantly within the news cycle. And this is something where, again, if we're looking at the vast majority of people who travel to Egypt, this is not something that is going to affect them statistically. But if you're sitting there thinking to yourself, where am I going to travel? This is probably going to be something that's going to maybe cross Egypt off that list for you. And I think that this is going to be something that's then going to be very, very bad for the country. And I think that that's what leads to the lack of communication about what actually happened to the plane. Again, by all indications, it was some sort of smaller bomb or device, although they're not confirming that. But they're not going to want to admit this. And it's such a shame, because this is going to be, I think, coupled with everything happening with King Tut and with the tomb for Nefertiti, which at this point really seems to be something that, when it does hit, it's going to be an embarrassment for the Egyptian government. It's something that so much noise was made at the highest levels. We had the Minister for Antiquities coming out saying we have something there, and all of a sudden now they are slowly backing away from that. Well, we're going to do more scans, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, because this is something that is going to, I think, be a real embarrassment and be another thing that's going to harm tourism. So we're juxtaposing, on the one hand, what could have really been something that brought people back to Egypt, you know, these tomb scans, if there was something there. And unfortunately, that's dominated some of the other recent things that have been wonderful, that could have attracted tourists on their own. They've opened a new series of tombs in Luxor that have been restored. The new scanning of the pyramids that they're doing now is giving us much more information about how those structures are built, and they're currently doing that for the Great Pyramid after a successful test run at a smaller, earlier pyramid. So there's a lot going on, but it's all overshadowed by these negative events, by what was thought to maybe be what would have been the biggest discovery probably since King Tut, now all of a sudden shows to be nothing. And it's not just that it's nothing. It's that the more that story develops, the worse the Egyptian ministry looks. It's gone from, we're 90% sure there's something there, to tourism ministers saying, we have confirmation of organic and metal objects behind this wall, to now, well, maybe there's something there, maybe there's not, there's maybe a 50% chance. And when we start to then request the data from the individual who did the initial scans, he starts to say, well, I can't disclose my data. I have machines that are so specialized that only I can read them. That's exactly what you don't have and you don't want in science. Science is all about experiments that can be repeatable and verifiable and that give us solid, objective information. So now all of a sudden, you're looking at them saying, why was this individual chosen to do these scans in the first place? The equipment that he used was decades old. And now that we're bringing in individuals and doing newer scans, there's simply nothing there. At least that's the rumor that I've been hearing. They won't release that full data, I think, much like they won't talk about what's going on with the terrorism and what's happening to this specific Egypt Air flight, because it is going to be an embarrassment and it is going to have a negative effect. And what this is going to mean in the long run is that Egypt is going to really have issues with their economy. And I think this is going to lead to issues with their government as well, unfortunately. You know, unemployment is high, and now all of a sudden this is something where I think we're going to see a huge drop-off in tourism. And if that lasts about a decade, and I want to say that, you know, if you looked at the numbers, after that massacre in Luxor that I spoke about at Deir al-Bahri, it was probably about 8 to 9 years, almost a decade or more before we actually had individuals coming back to Egypt in good numbers that were supporting. And then those grew and continued to grow until the revolution in 2011. And since then, it's been a steady decline with these attacks that just keep kind of punctuating it and really driving a nail. So I apologize that this isn't a more uplifting or maybe as interesting as an episode, but I did think it was something that, since we have been talking a lot about the possibility of travel to Egypt, and since people often ask about the modern political situation and my take on it, that this was something that I felt the need to talk about. You know, one of the first conversations I had about this was just how sad it makes me, because I have small children and I would love to take my children to Egypt. Egypt is a place that I love. And it's something where I think after this most recent episode, I would not feel safe taking my children there. Me risking myself there or knowing I can take care of myself is one thing. But when you start to have others who rely on you, you start to, you know, maybe think a different way. Hopefully, within, you know, a few years, it'll recover, it'll become more stable. But much of it, unfortunately, is out of the control of the Egyptians. That's also one of the things that's, I think, so shocking about this is, you know, Paris, Charles de Gaulle is a tight airport. It's got good security. And this was not an Egypt Air flight that left Egypt that exploded on its way to Paris. It was coming from a major European capital. So how did that device get on board? You know, is this something where it was created on board? Was it smuggled onto the plane? Was it something that was smuggled on in Egypt and then later, you know, detonated? Was it on a timer? It's really kind of impossible to say for now until we get more of that data released. But it is the type of thing that I think, unfortunately, once they do find the black boxes, if they did say, for instance, that this was caused by some sort of mechanical failure, and from all the stories I've seen, aviation experts have said that's not the case, that there were alarms about smoke, but that even if it was a mechanical failure, that the plane wouldn't have occurred in the way that it did. But that maybe, you know, suggests other things going on. But even if it was, this is the type of thing that retraction would take far less time to come across. I think that individuals would be, unfortunately, still have this image in their mind of just Egypt as not being a safe place and not being some place that you're necessarily going to go on vacation. And all of that then, as we've talked about, depresses the economy, leads to a lack of work within Egypt because you're going to have less people investing. When you've got less people going to the sites, that's less money to restore them, to protect them. So it's really, I think, unfortunately, a dark time for ancient Egypt and for tourism of ancient Egypt. And of course, that affects everyone in modern Egypt today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Eric's Guide to Ancient Egypt. I truly appreciate you taking the time to listen to the podcast. If you like the podcast, please subscribe to it and rate and review the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever format you listen to it on, if they allow that. If you have any questions or any feedback you'd like answered on the podcast, please, you can feel free to get in contact with me on ericsguidetoancientegypt.com or also through our Facebook page, Eric's Guide to Ancient Egypt, or on Twitter at Eric's Egypt. I also have an audience survey on my Twitter and Facebook pages, so if you'd like to give me any suggestions or feedback there, please feel free, and thanks for listening.